Good afternoon. Please be seated. The next case on the en banc argument calendar today is McKenzie Family LLC versus Wells Fargo Bank, case number 65696. Are counsel ready to go? All right, Mr. Fung.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Kerry Fonin on behalf of McKenzie Family Trust, LLC, as a purchaser in an HOA foreclosure sale. I would like to begin by reserving 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Today I will be addressing 4 points on why this court should reverse the grant of summary judgment in favor of the bank. First, the language of the notice of trustee sale does not preclude extinguishment of the first deed of trust. Second, the sale was commercially reasonable. Third, the notices were given according to the statute. And fourth, that NRS 116 is in fact constitutional. As to the first point, the language in the notice of trustee sale does not preclude the extinguishment of the first deed of trust. Well, the bank in this case would like you to believe that the HOA can unilaterally add or change language in a notice of trustee sale to change the nature of the lien that they hold. That is, in fact, not true. This court has held in the SFR case that an HOA has but one lien, which contains a sub and a super priority portion. The only way that the HOA can dispose of the super priority portion is to have it paid and released. There's no evidence in the record before you today that that took place in this case. As a result, when the HOA foreclosed its lien containing the super priority portion, and the purchaser at the foreclosure was the winning bidder, it purchased the subject property in this case free of the first deed of trust as soon as the gavel fell. If the court is still uncertain of those facts, then I would offer that would be a question of fact that would require remand in this case. Moving on to the next point, whether the HOA foreclosure sale was commercial or reasonable, which we contend it was.
Counsel, did the court even get there the way they went through the case, basically, since this is a pre-SFR case?
Your Honor, I don't know if the court would get there at this point, but the question was asked and it was raised. And
I understand that, but I guess really when I look back at what the district court did on the summary judgment motion, did they even get into this issue of commercial reasonableness?
They did not. I think that if, based on the record from the lower court, they merely misapplied the law as it was at that time, which has been clarified since by SFR, in that the first deed of trust is extinguished when the super priority portion is contained in the lien, and they held that that NRS 116 creates a payment priority rather than extinguishment. Based on those points alone, remand is required in this case. If Your Honors would like me to address commercial reasonableness, I can. Otherwise, I will just address the constitutionality of the statute.
Could I have you go over the notice issue, and I'd like to hear from counsel. I spent some time trying to trace through this notice issue here with it because we have a lot of entities involved. Now, my recollection is this, is that World Savings was owned by a company called Golden West Financial, which was acquired by Wachovia Bank, which was subsequently acquired by Wells Fargo. So there was a series of mergers here then like that. So it appeared to me, at least there's an argument that Wells Fargo did get notice because World Savings is now one of their subsidiaries. There was an allegation that, or I don't know if it was disputed, that World Savings got the notice of the notice of sale by the association. So maybe each side could clarify that for me if I'm misreading the facts or what happened.
No, you're exactly correct. There was a question of whether notice was received. In this case, if the record reflects that at volume 2, 90 through 93, reflects that In fact, notices were sent to World Savings at a number of addresses that they had received the notice of default at. The question of whether they were received, I don't believe rises to the issue here, because under the statute, the responsibility is to merely send them. Receipt is not an actual
Wells Fargo say they never received notice of it?
But
isn't
again,
that part of the record? Did I read that correct?
That is correct. But again, whether they received it is not a burden that falls to the buyer.
Okay.
The buyer simply can, under 116-31166, sub 1, the buyer can rely upon the recitals in the deed that all the criteria was met. And in this case, it's merely the giving of notice of the sale.
And as to that point, is substantial compliance enough where the various notices of mailing, they didn't have copies of or whatever, the ombudsman wasn't provided notice?
But again, that would be a question, again, that would require remand as to whether substantial compliance would be enough. But in this case, the record reflects that they were, in fact, sent the notices. And again, the buyer at the foreclosure sale does not bear the burden of proving that all the steps were followed. The recitals under 116-31166 give them conclusive proof as to the buyer whether the proper avenues were followed. In this case, the bank, if that were a question of fact that turned out to be true, the bank would have a remedy against the HOA, but not against the buyer. And discussing that,
unless all you bought was the sub-priority, is the record clear in this case that the HOA was conducting a sale to recover both the super-priority and the sub-priority?
The record is not complete, and Your Honor, I would offer that there is no evidence that the super priority was ever paid. Therefore, the language I would offer is immaterial in the notice of trustee sale, because, as this court has held, the HOAs have one lien, and it's a two-part lien, a sub and a super priority. And if you foreclose with the super priority as a portion of that lien, as a matter of law, you wipe out the first deed of trust. And absent some proving that the super priority portion had been paid, the buyer at that sale purchased the sub and the super priority portions, and thus wiped out the first deed of trust in this case.
Well, counsel submits the supplemental authorities on the federal case, which seems to be clear that it's a foreclosure of a sub-priority only in that case. If we're not clear what was foreclosed on in this case, then shouldn't this whole thing be remanded for the court to sort out the facts on what's going on here?
It should. And that would be the remedy here, is to remand to sort out those facts. Aside from the
I guess I want to know from counsel whether, if remand is appropriate because of the fact that the decision in this case was made pre-SFR by the trial judge and there is some uncertainty about the underlying facts, whether it's necessary or even in a position to reach the constitutional question. You've already indicated commercial reasonableness couldn't be evaluated based on the condition of this record. Seems a bit premature to reach some of these questions. And you're not clear yourself, apparently, on what was foreclosed.
No, Your Honor, we're very clear that based on the record, the super priority was a portion of the lien that was foreclosed and thus wiped out the first deed of trust.
Well, but aren't you overreading a bit the SFR decision, which was an appeal from an order dismissing a complaint and on in a preliminary injunction? And so everything in that case credited the allegations in the complaint as true. And so to my mind, this case, I second Chief Justice Hardesty's concern that are we getting ahead of ourselves trying to, and I appreciate the need for answers to these questions, but this case was decided on cross motions for summary judgment pre-SFR, and there are many other issues and factual developments and so on. I worry when I listen to your argument that you're reading that case as standing for more than perhaps it does, and we don't have the factual record here as fully developed. When you do a summary judgment motion, you're entitled to know what you're trying to meet on the merits and what the true legal issues are. I'm not sure that this record fully developed does.
And I would agree with Your Honor that the record as it stands, while the questions were raised, the basis for the grant of summary judgment was a misapplication.
It was that it was a payment priority only, and you're off to the races then.
And that it did not extinguish the first deed of trust. I would say that this court has jurisdiction to entertain any questions that
it... Oh, sure, a jurisdiction, but as a prudential matter, is it what we should do here? When they weren't reached by the district court because they went off on other grounds.
And I would again offer that I think these are issues that need to be addressed. If Your Honor does not want to address them in this particular case, I would understand that. But just based on the record alone, remand is required because of the fact that it was a misapplication of 116 by the district court.
Okay. Unless there's something you have a burning desire to talk about, I'd like to hear from your opponent about this issue.
I do not have a burning desire other than that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, David Merrill on behalf of Wells Fargo Bank. Based upon Chief Justice Hardesty's comment, I'll get right to the issue of why the case should still be here, and the fact that this court can affirm the decision of the district court, even though it was made on a ground pre-SFR, which is no longer valid post-SFR, the court can still affirm the decision of the district court on any ground supported by the record. And the ground supported by the record is that the notice of trustee sale and the sale that was done here was the foreclosure of the sub-priority piece of the association's lien.
Help me understand where in the record one could see that clearly. I am aware of where the notice is, but I don't know where the financial information is would confirm that the amount in the notice is only for the sub-priority piece.
Again, I don't know that they're focusing on the amount is only the sub-priority. It's what was advertised for sale. The notice of sale specifically advertised that whoever bought at the public auction would take subject to the bank's first deed of trust.
But there's some confusion in this case that makes it a little bit different than the federal case because the deed, as I understand it in this case, doesn't recite the same as the notice, so it raises the question why I'm asking it. What was covered by this? Did they shift gears and sell it for something that would have covered both the sub and super priority lien at the sale, at the auction itself? Where in the record would one find all this stuff?
Well, in the notice of sale itself, which I've already referenced, is found in the record at 2JA324, mm-hmm. which does mention that they're going to take subject to. The second part of the notice of sale, which is important here, is it has an estimated sale amount of $10,000. So that estimated sale amount of $10,000 may make sense if you're taking subject to a first deed of trust, but if you are foreclosing and you are wiping out the first deed of trust, a $10,000 sale amount is not going to make sense in a situation where somebody's buying a 2,700 square foot home in Las Vegas.
But the lien was only for $2,414, so it's quadrupled the amount of the lien. So what about this? Where does $10,000 come from?
The lien actually, and there is some issue with respect to that, the lien in the notice of sale was $8,159. The amount that was credit bid at the sale was $9,000, and the amount for which it was purchased for was $9,001. And so this estimated amount of $10,000 is in the notice of sale. And again, the notice of sale expressly...
But what this raises is an interesting interesting question about whether this court, even if one were to say we agreed with the analysis by Judge Gordon, it appears, based on the amounts, that this foreclosure sale included both the sub-priority and the super-priority. And that's a different question than what Judge Gordon dealt with in the Lipscomb, or however you pronounce that case, right?
Yes, in that case.
So isn't it necessary to develop factually whether the foreclosure in this case included both? I mean, counsel here says, well, we're the purchaser, so we get to rely on the statutory cover and we don't have to worry about this. But maybe you do if what you bought was a sub-priority.
Correct, and Your Honor, I think the issue is, and sort of an analogy is, if I see an advertisement for a Ferrari and it's announced, the advertisement's $1.99 and it's a toy Ferrari, and here it is, here's a toy Ferrari, and I buy the toy Ferrari for $1.99, and then I file a lawsuit and come in and say, no, where's my full Ferrari? I want my $80,000 Ferrari. I wouldn't even get past the motion to dismiss stage, yet that's exactly what they're coming in. They're coming in saying, we've read the notice of trustee sale. That's how we knew about the sale. We read it. We did our research. We ordered a preliminary title report. We knew about Wells Fargo's deed of trust. And we knew that at the trustee sale, we would buy, according to the language of the sale, subject to the deed of trust. And they're coming in saying, wait a second, we don't like the language of the trustee sale. We didn't buy just the sub-priority. We bought everything. We bought the full Ferrari, not just the toy. And that's the problem that I have with the argument that they're making, and that is supported by the record. And in the deed itself,
where, back to your where or how? That's what I'm trying to understand.
I'm sorry?
How is it supported?
In the record, but based upon the language of the notice of trustee sale, that whoever purchases will take subject to the first deed.
So you're relying exclusively on the notice.
That and the estimated sale amount, plus the deed does say it was done in accordance with or in compliance with the notice of trustee sale. So there is that language in the deed itself that says it was done under the notice of trustee sale. Under the notice of trustee sale, again, if we go back to it, you've got the language in the notice of trustee sale which says whoever purchases is taking subject to.
But Mr. Merrill, let me ask you this. I understand your argument.
Yes.
That the kind of SFR was kind of a revolutionary case, you know, with that happening. And doesn't that change shift the game under SFR? I mean, it is an indication, at least the argument that opposing counsel is making, that if you have part super priority and part non-super priority, it still wipes out the first trust deed if you don't go in there and satisfy it, and perhaps it does. So what's your response to that?
My response is I don't believe SFR can be read that broadly. SFR, especially with respect to the waiver provision, was talking about the CC&Rs, and you may not waive the super priority by having a CC&R by contract. Well, this isn't a waiver issue. This is an election to foreclose upon a sub-priority as opposed to a super priority issue. And NRS...
Your reading of this is it's 100% a sub-priority foreclosure by virtue of the reading in the notice of sale, and therefore Linwood is on all fours.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes.
But you don't concede that any part of this notice of sale would have reached the super priority piece of the lien. If that's so, then why were you moving to get summary judgment on the premise that super priority liens are mere payment priorities, and in this case, their foreclosure would not extinguish a first deed of trust.
And to be clear,
it seems like you hedged that bet.
I did. I mean, we did argue in the district court that the court didn't even need to get to the NRS 116 issues because of the notice of sale.
It was a pure sub-priority foreclosure.
I'm sorry?
Because it was a pure sub-priority foreclosure by virtue of the...
Yes, we did argue that because the notice of sale said this is what you're buying, they can't become heard to come into court and say, no, we bought more than what it said we were buying. And so we did make that argument in the summary judgment. And
it was alternative arguments.
It was alternative arguments. Unfortunately, the district court conceitedly did not decide that issue down below. It decided purely the pre-SFR payment priority issue. But that was an argument we did raise in the district court. And there was no genuine issue of material fact with respect to what the notice of trustee sale said and what occurred occurred in this case, and that's the whole point where I believe the court can still affirm this based upon the record of this case. With respect to going back to Justice Gibbons' comment that about the waiver and about the issue in SFR, well, NRS 116.3102 gives pretty broad powers to the executive board with respect to what they can and can't do and how they can. They're allowed to compromise any claim for unpaid assessments, and they have quite an amount of flexibility as to whether even to bring an enforcement action in the first place. And again, if there's a foreclosure of the sub-priority piece, you're not waiving the super-priority piece. You're just electing not to enforce it at that time. But in theory, at least, that super-priority lien would still be intact and would still be in place. So that's how I think it's a little different than the decision and the waiver decision in SFR.
Okay. Can you answer the – let's go into the notice issue if we could.
Sure.
Tell me why, if World Savings received notice, that it wouldn't be given – that's notice to Wells Fargo as a subsequent – owner of 100% of the stock, I guess World Savings or Golden West Financial, whomever. What's your position on that as far as the notice issue?
I don't think we're debating that notice issue, Your Honor. There was, as noted in the briefs, World Savings changed its name to Wachovia Mortgage in 2007, and then in 2009 changed from a federal savings bank to a national bank, simultaneously changed its name to Wells Fargo Bank Southwest, and simultaneously then merged into Wells Fargo Bank. So there wasn't an issue with respect to, well, the notice went to World Savings, and so therefore it wasn't noticed to Wells Fargo. The issue, which I do agree is an issue of fact, which we actually note in our brief, is not an issue that we are raising on appeal because of that, was there was an issue as to whether Wells Fargo received the notice of trustee sale in this case. That was the notice issue, but again, that wasn't really part of the appeal. That wasn't decided by the district court. What I'm asking this court to do is affirm based upon the record here and the record here that there's no genuine issue of material fact with respect to this notice of sale that was done advertising that the purchaser will buy essentially subject to Wells Fargo's deed of trust. Therefore, they are buying the sub-priority portion of the lien. The super-priority portion has not been waived. In theory, it would still be in place, but they bought the sub-priority portion. On that basis, this court can affirm the district court.
Good.
I'm sorry, Justice Starks, I thought you were going to ask me a question.
Well, I'm dying too, but I'll for now. You've been interrupted enough. Go ahead and finish your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. So again, I do think Judge Gordon's opinion. Let me back up. Even if the court,
I will say this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Judge Gordon's order is August 31st, 2015.
Correct.
Well after the briefing in this case.
It is, Your Honor.
Way after the district court got to weigh in on any of this.
Correct.
So I'm a bit skeptical about how sound the record is for us to just jump on that plank and leap forward without knowing exactly what happened in this record about what the buyer bought and what the HOA auctioned. I appreciate your point about the notice. But if this sale included the super priority lien, my guess is that counsel's going to argue that it got purchased. Then maybe we get into questions about whether the notice is defective and all these kinds of things. But some of the issues that you rightfully have put before the court in this appeal aren't really ripe till you get past all those issues. Do you see what I'm saying?
I certainly understand your concern, Your Honor, because of the decision that was rendered by the district court, but I believe with Judge Gordon's opinion and with the record, this was not a motion to dismiss. This was a summary judgment. So certainly
I'm not even sure that this court would agree with Judge Gordon's opinion.
Understood. And I'm arguing because I do agree with it, but what I'm saying is that if it is, and I understand there's been a lot of water under the bridge in the past year or so, but if the record supports, which I believe it does, that it was a sub-priority foreclosure, this court can affirm based upon that record. And I believe the record is fully developed enough to where it does support that. If it's under the first part of Judge Gordon's analysis, that the court does have, or the board, I should say, the association board does have.
But counsel,
yes, Your Honor.
His analysis also included some representations that were made at the sale itself, which is very different from the case we have.
That's correct, Your Honor. There was a representation at the sale itself, but there wasn't in that case in the notice of
that seemed to be my particular reading, and I appreciate your reading, but sure. My reading, that was the push that pushed it the other way for him to conclude what he was concluding.
Your Honor, I would disagree because at the foreclosure sale itself, if there's an announcement at the foreclosure sale itself, you're dealing with a very limited, finite group of people and what is being sold. Whereas with the notice of trustees sale that says, this is our advertisement to the whole world. This sale is going to occur, not just to Wells Fargo, not just to the homeowner, to the world. This sale is going to occur, and this is what's going to happen at the sale. And what's going to happen at the sale, according to the notice of trustees sale, is they're going to acquire a deed subject to Wells Fargo's deed of trust. That's the advertisement that goes out. So I think the facts of our case are, in fact, a little stronger than the facts where there's just an announcement made at the auction, at the bid process, because the purpose of the sale, of course, is to generate a lot of interest and a lot of buyers. And if the notice itself, I'm sorry, you're going to write
that. That's okay. It just challenges common sense that I'm going to come and charge in and I'm going to pay $9,000 for the sub-priority lien. I'm still going to owe the HOA when I take it over for the super-priority, and I just bought a piece of property with a $300,000 loan against it. I mean, even these speculators, I'm not sure are that foolish, but maybe they are.
Your Honor, I think the whole statutory scheme kind of challenges common sense because at the foreclosure sale, the way it's drafted, you could follow the black letter law of the statute, and the way it's drafted, nobody knows what's really bought at the sale. So I see my time is up unless any of Your Honor said another question.
I just had one. In the discussion, were you involved in the Linwood arguments with Judge Gordon?
I was not, Your Honor.
Okay.
I was not.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any further questions for counsel? All right. I apologize for cutting you off. I didn't mean to be rude. Did you want to add anything to the argument?
No, Your Honor. I'm fine with it. Okay. I would just add a few things as to what was discussed. Let me rephrase that.
My just teasing. I'm done with. Just teasing.
Addressing.
It's been a long day, so you're the victim of some.
As it has been on this side, Your Honor. I would address a couple of things. In looking at the notice, their whole case hangs on the notice, the wording in the notice of trustee sale. But I would offer the notice of trustee sale's main purpose is to notice the world when the sale is, where it is, who to speak to regarding the sale, and the property being sold. In this case, you have amounts that from the notice of delinquent assessments mm-hmm. increased when it got to the notice of default and intent to sell, and increased again at the notice of trustee sale. To argue that the super priority portion wasn't a piece of that, it would seem that common sense, as Your Honor said, would require that amount to decrease, not increase as you move along. In this case, you have the amounts continually increasing, which common sense would tell someone looking at that they're buying with the super priority piece. And I believe that is really the crux of, you know, going back to my original argument. The HOA cannot go and change the language in the notice of trustee sale and add whatever they want and change the nature of the lien that this court has already said the HOAs have, which is one lien with a super and a sub-priority portion. If you foreclose containing the super-priority portion, it extinguishes the first deed of trust. It's already. I believe that's just a simple.
But the whole point of the question was we don't know what the components are of the dollar amount. Now, to counsel's analogy, I might be foolish enough to show up at a sale to buy a Ferrari for $1.99, but I know my colleague, Justice Douglas, isn't going to do that. He's already got too many cars. So So I just am concerned that the record supports either party's position here on this issue.
But, Your Honor, we have to look at it as well, at, given the time this was going on.
Yeah.
In the environment, the law was very uncertain.
Well, I'm not being critical of lawyers. I mean, you're put in a position here where a lot has happened since this case was decided by the district court.
But what I'm referring to is the prices at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Bourne Valley Trust case, Judge Proh said that given the circumstances and the risks involved at that time, the inadequacy of price was to be expected. So to look at price alone would...
Oh, I don't mean amount price. I mean amount. What's included within the assessment that is the subject of the sale? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Then again,
and,
I would
have... And I think that reasonable minds can differ, but there does appear to be a valid argument that it includes or may not include the super priority lien. And in the absence of that information, it's hard to make these legal issues or these legal calls from my perspective.
And that's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And in that case, the proper course of action would be to reverse and remand so that those issues can be flushed out.
Yeah.
Given the fact that there's nothing in the record that shows that the super priority portion had been satisfied.
Okay.
Chief, can I ask one
yes,
question?
If
you'd respond to what Mr. Merrill said, that because of the way the notice of sale was worded, saying it would take subject to the first deed of trust, he's saying as a matter of law that it doesn't make a difference if you bought the what portion you bought, because the notice characterized it as being subject to the first deed of trust, even though it's pre-SFR, so things have changed. What's your comment to that? He feels that they're entitled to an affirmance just because of the base of the way that the notice of sale was worded.
But I think, Your Honor, if you look at the SFR ruling, you still only have one lien. The HOAs are given one lien. If the super priority portion is a part of that lien, then by operation of law, the first deed of trust is extinguished. There's, again, it goes back to adding whatever language that the HOA wants does not allow them to change the nature of the lien that's being foreclosed.
So you're saying the notice makes no difference then under SFR?
I think I would say that it's immaterial as to what, in this case, what was being sold, because the fact of the matter is the first, according to the record or lack thereof, information in the record, the super priority portion was still attached to the lien.
Okay.
Wouldn't that apply in every case? The super priority is going to be attached to every lien. I mean, this is pretty clear in this case that it's being taken.
There could be an instance where it wouldn't, depending on, like if there had been work done that was subject to something that would be a sub-priority, but they were current on their dues.
Maybe.
May I ask another question?
Of course.
So you think it's a legal impossibility for what occurred in Linwood, where they had a specific statement by the representative that we are not foreclosing at the sale, there was some sort of statement that was made that all that is being foreclosed here is the sub-priority piece, and if you buy, you will still be subject to the super-priority lien. That's Linwood. There's that statement in that case. You're saying that statement is a legal impossibility. Is that your argument in answer to Justice Gibbons' question?
I would say no, and I would follow in that case, you had circumstances where the bidders at the sale were put on notice. There was no crying such, and I would say that there would be then a question that would require the court to address whether, again, the HOA can do that. Because based on SFR, there is just one lien, and I don't believe that there's a mechanism by which they could bifurcate their lien.
But what if there was only sums due on the sub-priority piece? That could happen, that the HOA did some sort of repair work that was part of a sub-priority assessment, and the homeowner had dutifully paid all of the monthly assessments. And so there was nothing due on it that would have had a super-priority position.
In that case, you're foreclosing the one lien that only contains the sub-priority portion. If there is no super-priority portion attached.
So in that case, your client would lose because they would have paid only, they would have been foreclosing only the sub-priority fees.
They would have purchased what the lien was at that time, correct.
Okay.
And that lien, and the lien at that time, which again brings us back to the question of if the super-priority is a portion of that lien, then that's what they purchased. They purchased with the super-priority portion, thus extinguishing the first deed of trust. In this case, if your honors don't have any other questions.
I would make a clean getaway.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both, gentlemen. We appreciate your input, and notwithstanding a bit of humor, it's a very serious matter. We appreciate very much your arguments.